A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is 21st of July, Tuesday class. So we will continue from where we stopped. We are at page 149, section 1.2 of lesson 29 of the Heart Sutta, second edition. As usual, before we start the sharing, we will have half an hour of awareness-based meditation so that you can prepare your mind to develop the sati within. So this half an hour of silent awareness meditative training is very useful. If every day you can do it at least two or three times, will be good. When you wake up, before you sleep, and whenever you are free. Half an hour is just a guide. If you want to do it for 45 minutes, it's up to you. If you have already developed it, 45 minutes to 1 hour is very normal, very simple. But for those who are new, maybe 10, 20 minutes first, then extend it to about half an hour. So normally, if it's about half an hour or so, then you can settle down much better. But for those who already know how to meditate, no problem. Any duration will do. Sometimes 10 minutes is already very good. You can relax, maintain awareness, and you will have good rest. And it's like you recuperate very fast. Then as you age, maybe if you want to develop the ability to recuperate your body, you can actually do it for longer duration. The most important thing is to relax body and mind completely, entirely, and silent. To realize your silent mind, your true mind, your awareness nature within. So just stay there until the awareness become very clear, until that nature become very stable. That's how you develop the meditative mind. Then you will understand many things. You will progress very fast. Then meditation will become very easy. And most of the time you are heedful, mindful, aware, peaceful, tranquil, still, without much thought. Okay, now we will allow you to develop the meditation. I will off the light, then you can do it for half an hour. Remember the four support. Relax body and mind, maintain awareness, let things be, don't try to know, don't try to do anything. Just silence your mind, maintain awareness. Relax body and mind. Then after that, stabilize the awareness. And finally, if you have the ability to stay at the heart with a very calm and peaceful awareness mind, then you can develop the fourth support, which is trust. So first step is relax body and mind and maintain awareness. That's it, finish. Then after that, the third step is 24 hours if you can. It's as long as you can. You must be in the state of awareness or heedfulness. Then finally is to trust your nature to do no more interference from the thought. You can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. So this Sarangama Sutta is very useful and we have gone through it. The main thing that is taught in this Sarangama Sutta is mainly the 50 Divine Samadhi to warn cultivator. Then of course at the beginning of the Sarangama Sutta, it teaches the mind Ananda was asked a question about the mind. And where is the mind located? So Ananda went around beating the bush, doesn't understand. And finally, the Buddha explained. Then after that, the five aggregate, everything came about. So the five aggregates of form and mind, they are very useful, very important. It's also taught in the Surangama Sutta. Especially the mundane mind. Then later on, the true mind. Then the deviant samadhi. Then all the aggregates of mind. Okay. Then we go to 1.2. 1.2, the subheading is a condition arising phenomenal world of consciousness. So this is for cultivator to develop understanding, because our world is not what we think. Most human beings thought the world is real, something very solid, tangible, and life is also like very real, because we have all the various civilization that arise, evolve throughout the ages of civilization. And our planet Earth is supposed to be more than 10 billion years. It's still evolving. It's still in existence. So everything is like very real, very tangible. But as a cultivator, when we develop the understanding of our nature, our mind, and who we are, what we are, and how we come, and how we arise, then we came to a great awakening, a realization that our mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So everything is mind-made. Therefore, our world is a condition arising phenomenal world of consciousness, because mind is mainly consciousness, especially our mundane mind, the condition arising mind, dependent originating. So from mind, everything comes to be. Then when we understand that, we can return everything back to mind. Then this mind back to its pure awareness nature before it's arising. Then from there, we understand the process of creation. So now I'll read to you, then maybe you will have better understanding. A condition arising phenomenal world of consciousness. Everything you come to know and perceive is manifested through mind. So here, the mind refers to the mundane mind. Mind make ade, a condition arising phenomenal world of consciousness. Before mind arise, there was nothing. So everything comes about after mind has arisen, via mental consciousness. So how real can mental consciousness be? It just a mental image. Constantly arising and passing away from moment to moment, hence its impermanence and empty nature or anatta nature. If you can't understand all this via wisdom, then you will grasp and cling onto all this mental manifestation very strongly, thinking that they are very real. This is delusion, and it can be very powerful as to cause you a lot of suffering via your sorrow, lamentation, and fear, etc. But when you train your mind to be silent, ever mindful and heedful, then you will be able to see things as they are, thereby developing the wisdom and understanding to enable you to free and liberate your mind so that you need not suffer anymore. then you will be able to connect to the true mind and live from there. It is this true mind in pure awareness that can see things as they are, to realize the enlightenment in the here and the now. When wisdom stabilizes, the mundane mind will realize itself and cease to be, leading to the realization of Nibbana. Nibbana is the complete cessation of form and mind. Even the pure awareness also will cease, and it cannot be talked about. It is the unconditioned, and is beyond the form and mind. The Mahayana sixth consciousness is equivalent to the Theravada Sanya aggregate of mind, which is usually translated as mental perception or cognition. It also includes the conception and discerning aspect of the mundane mind, but the key meaning is perception and cognition. The first five types of consciousness are seeing consciousness, hearing consciousness, smell, tactile, and taste consciousness. So these are the first five, because we have five physical senses. So each of them can arise one of their respective sense or consciousness. So Mahayana, when they talk about the eight or the nine consciousness, is nothing special. It's actually similar to what the Theravada has learned, except the Theravada didn't divide into so many, in the sense that they teach the five aggregates of form and mind in more detail. Whereas Mahayana like to emphasize that they have more type of consciousness. But basically it's the same, because the first five physical senses will have their first five respective sense or consciousness. Like our eye, EYE, our eye is capable of arising the seeing consciousness. We can become conscious of what we see. Then we can become conscious of what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we tactile feel and think. So thinking is the sixth consciousness. So thinking is actually a combination of mental activity followed by perception. So mental consciousness is the result of the mind making contact with the brain. Then from there, it manifests mental consciousness. But when the mind moves to the senses, for example, at the organ of hearing, then that mental consciousness will be part of the hearing consciousness. Similarly, when it is at the eye level, your seeing consciousness, there is also the mental consciousness inside there. Because without mind, you cannot trigger off consciousness. So the sixth consciousness is actually a common denominator, because you need mind. Without mind, all the other five senses, the consciousness cannot arise. So the Mahayana call that the sixth consciousness, Sanya. So when you start to perceive, every moment of seeing you can perceive, every moment of hearing you can perceive, every moment of smell, taste, tactile, you can also perceive. So thought consciousness is thinking. There you can also perceive through memory. That's why thought is respond to memory. So through memory you arise the thought. Then you input the content of consciousness. So at the moment of seeing is the same, you input the content of consciousness, which is mainly from your memory before you have the wisdom. So this sixth consciousness is called Sanya. So Sanya is the mental perception or cognition aspect of mind. So it also has certain quality like conception and discerning. But the key meaning of sanya is perception. When you perceive something means you try to recognize something through memory. So sometimes Mahayana use the word cognition. The first five types of consciousness are your seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile consciousness. Then the six and seven and the eight consciousness of the Mahayana are within the mental consciousness that arise upon contact of mind with their respective sense organ and data. So whenever a sense or consciousness arise, when you input the content of consciousness, the other aggregate went in. Perception, mental activity or sankhara and jnana. So all these are the respective 6, 7 and 8 consciousness of the Mahayana. And they are within the mental consciousness that arise upon with every contact of mind with their respective sense organ and sense data. The mundane mind or the false thinking mind is not your true mind because it is condition arising. That is not a permanent unchanging entity. It has no nature of its own. Whereas Nirvana is totally different because it is the unconditioned. Once the mundane mind completely ceases, then the true mind will manifest, leading upstream to the realization of the oneness nature or the Buddha nature. So this will happen when you realize the cessation, which is the enlightenment, Nibbana. Mundane mind is the deluded, heedless thinking mind. And this one is capable of false perception or cognition, memory, knowledge, and false thinking. And all these are karmically related. Mundane mind is the deluded, heedless thinking mind, capable of false perception because before you have the wisdom, your perception is all distorted. That's why they call it false perception. Then also cognition, memory, knowledge, and false thinking. So all these are karmic related. Sanya and sankhara are very active within it. It constantly clings and grabs onto sense data, whereas the true mind is a silent, heedful mind, pure and clear, profound, bright mind. It can be aware of sense data, thoughts, and it can also see things as they are. The mind of the enlightened one is connected to their true mind with wisdom. It is the essence of mind, the unconditioned mind. So here we need to meditate to understand all this, because we have two minds. One is the true mind, which is the unconditioned, before the arising of the mundane mind. The mundane mind is the byproduct of the true mind, and it needs condition to arise. It is dependent originating. But the pure nature, the pure awareness, and that one is needed to trigger off consciousness. Then when you input the content, it becomes a thought. It becomes the fire aggregate of form and mind, and the mundane mind arise. You need to meditate to see all this clearly. Yeah. Then there is one aspect of the content of consciousness which very few people understand. The content of consciousness that went in is actually sankhara, means whatever your mind can do, all of it. And it includes feeling and perception. So whenever you perceive, you think, whenever you perceive, you think, and all these are related to memory, where your conditioning, your views, opinion, and belief system, your whatever accumulated experiences, good and bad, they are all there. Then from there, you act. So within this content, if you understand, basically the three things, Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, they constantly arise. Vedana is feeling. Whenever feeling arises, it conditions craving. Without wisdom, craving will arise. Then you have to perceive it first. Then you think. That's why perception and thinking, they work together as a pair. So we call it Sankara Sanya. Actually, it's Sanya Sankara. Whenever you perceive, you think, then you stir your mind, you react your emotion. You stir your mind and react to sense experience to arise the respective emotion. And all these emotions are your mental states, your like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. And when you meditate, you calm yourself down, you have all the very beautiful mental states. You can have tranquility, you have stillness, you have can have peacefulness of mind, calmness of mind, the silent mind. Then when you are not able to develop the meditative mind, you think a lot, you become heedless, your mind becomes restless. Then when you have problem, you worry, you have anxiety, then sometimes you become sad, miserable, arising the sorrow and the lamentation. So these are the various mind states that can arise when you react to sense experience and when you stir your mind. Even fear, anger, envy, jealousy, these are all the various mind states or part of Sankara. So Sankara Sanya, they are very active inside there, and the result is always from contact. Upon contact, the seven universal arise, and the main one are Vedana, Sanya, and Sankara. These are the content of consciousness, and the movement and the activity within, you can't see unless you are mindful, unless you are aware within. Otherwise, you are lost in thought, heedless. Then you cannot understand what is going on. Then you will be entangled, you will be trapped. That's why self-delusion, sakkāyādhiṭṭhi will arise. Then the false perception leads to wrong thought. That condition, your mental suffering, your misery, all of the negativity of mind state. So your fear, your insecurity, your phobia, your scars of memory, your unhappy moments, they are the result of wrong thought, conditioned by wrong view, conditioned by self-delusion, that condition beings to believe they exist. When the personality arises, the egoic mind arises, because you think you exist, you are real. Then you want to own things, you want to possess things. That's how you become selfish, greedy. Then when things don't go your way, you become angry, you become emotional. Then when you cannot understand what is going on, you have doubt, you have fear, you have worry, your mind becomes restless. So all these are the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. And it comes from the egoic mind that cling on to the five aggregate of form and mind, or the human being in our case, or the living being as the me and the I. You believe this is you because you believe this is permanent. But when you meditate, when you silence your mind through that silent observation, you awaken. You can insight into phenomena. Then you can see clearly how everything dependent originating, how all of phenomena arise and pass away following nature's condition. So everything that arises is dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena. That's the reason why it has the universal characteristics of impermanent anicca, following nature's law. If you want things your way, which is not nature's way, suffering will arise. That's how the second universal characteristics of dukkha, or suffering, arise. And because it's impermanent, it's not a permanent unchanging entity, that's why you cannot cling, you cannot hold, you cannot grasp. And you cannot say, this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine. So the adatta nature has two aspects that wisdom will arise. The first aspect of anatta is it is not a permanent unchanging entity where you can cling on to, hold on to and say, this is me, this is I. So there is no such thing as self. There's no self. But our formic mind is not self, but it is non-self. So that differentiation you must see clearly. Self means a permanent unchanging entity. Whereas non-self means there are things, but it's not nothingness. It's also not everything self. The two extremes, atta and attaniya. So the Buddha taught in between, the middle way, anatta. Anatta is neither self or no self, but it is non-self. It is not self. It is not a permanent unchanging entity. But there is such a thing as a human being, which is dependent originating, condition arising. And it's also not no self, nothingness, completely nothing. No. It is somewhere in between. And this is the uniqueness of the Buddha's teaching. And all this arises because there is a karmic nature within nature. And through this karmic nature, it conditions, a karmically conditioned form and mind. This is the one that is subject to karma. This is the one that is dependent originating, not a permanent unchanging entity, yet is connected to our nature. Not us, not real, but connected to our nature. Basically, it's the karmic nature, that's why it's subject to karma. So this form and mind, each and every life we come, every segment, we call it the five aggregates of form and mind. And in our society, we call it the human being. So this human being is not real, because it is dependent originating, condition arising, karmically conditional. For our nature to come, we need this vehicle and tool to come. So that is the uniqueness of the Buddha's teaching. This understanding is very deep, very profound. Unless you meditate to awaken, you can never become enlightened. The realization of Nibbana can only arise after you have penetrated this understanding, which is very, very unique and very profound. Okay, I will read on. Part 2, the definition. Sanya is perception. Sanya brings the external form into the mind via mental perception, and it is also called the sixth consciousness. The external form then becomes the mental form or sense data for the mind to arise the mental consciousness, because mind is also an organ. So our this mind organ is basically from the brain. The organ is the brain. The brain is the one that gives rise to thought consciousness. Your brain has memory, and thought is respond to memory. So when we think, we make contact with the memory because we recollect through memory. So from memory, we perceive. That's why we can label the external form that we come to perceive, like the Buddha image, my voice, everything you come to perceive through your seeing consciousness. If you have not learned it before, you don't have accumulated memory of that words or that idea or that concept, then you cannot create a thought to label it. That's why perception need memory. Yeah. But for the enlightened one is different. They don't act according to memory. They have the direct seeing. They can see things as they are. They act from wisdom. We are the true mind, the silent mind. That's why the whole process is totally different. The enlightened being act differently. The Puttajana or unenlightened, they act through memory. And they use thought. And they are very, very active in the thinking aspect. They are very heedless. So because of that, they are caught, they are entangled by what they see and what they perceive. Mainly due to their lack of wisdom or understanding. They lack right view, right understanding. So without wisdom, you cannot act. Technically, you cannot act. All of your action is with the evil roots. Delusion. Mainly delusion. So acting according to memory is not acting at all. That is the reason why. You need to act with understanding, act with wisdom, following Noble Eightfold Path, following the Dhamma way as taught by the Buddha. So this aspect is very useful. So coming back to the brain, now you understand, when you start to think, you make contact with the brain. And the brain, through perception, perceive. So when it perceives, it becomes the content. It went in. So this content that come in to the mental consciousness is the external form. So within your mental consciousness, you have the other four aggregate: Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnana. But you don't have a Rupang. So this Rupang, which is mental form, enters the mind through perception. So when this Rupang come in, the external form enters through the aggregates of perception. This become the sense data for the mental consciousness. So the brain is the organ. So you can see like the physics experiment. Upon contact, the light bulb lights up. It becomes conscious. So upon contact, the sense data is there, the mental form. Together with that brain, which is the organ, it triggers off the mental consciousness. So that's how the perception sanya aggregate trigger off the six consciousness. Then the six consciousness that brings in the external form, will make another contact and trigger off the mental consciousness, which is the eight consciousness. So the eight consciousness is the resultant. Whereas the seventh consciousness is the perception, the sankhara part. The sankhara now is like the organ that actually receives the sense data, means the mental form. The sense data, which is the mental form, yeah, through sankhara, it creates the mental consciousness. So that becomes the eighth consciousness. The seventh one, that sankhara movement, is the seventh consciousness. So it is through explaining these three that they created the six, seven, and eight consciousness. So the six, seven, and eight consciousness is basically sanya, sankhara, and vijnana, no different. Yeah. But they explain it in such a way that people who don't understand thought Mahayana is much deeper in its understanding. Sometimes they very proudly tell the Theravada practitioner, you only have the six type of consciousness, we got eight. Then later on they add in the enlightenment Nibbana as the nine consciousness. But Nibbana is the unconditioned, it's not a consciousness. So you cannot say it is the nine consciousness. You can say it's the unconditioned. So all this teaching, if you have penetrated the Theravada understanding, you can also understand the Mahayana teaching. That's the reason why I say, if you have the clear understanding, there is no difference from the Theravada teaching. If you have really awakened and penetrated, you can also understand the Mahayana teaching. The only difference is the Mahayana, they emphasize a lot more on the Bodhisattva way. The Bodhisattva way actually includes the cultivation of the 10 perfection, but they limit to the 6 perfection. So to them, when they cultivate the 6 perfection, is enough because it will lead to the 10 perfection. So the different emphasis and the different approach apparently makes the thing like very different. In fact, if you understand, there is no difference. But I don't want to use the word admit or what. I have to tell you that the Mahayana Bodhisattva way is in fact a very, very extraordinary additional cultivation which Theravada is lacking. Theravada, the teaching only mentioned that the Buddha did it, but how he do it is almost silent. It's only mentioned that he perfected the 10 perfection, the 10 paramitas, and after so many eons, 3¾ sankhya kapas, he realized samasamadhu, yeah. And he received the prediction and all those things. But the whole of the cultivation process to be a bodhisattva was more or less silent inside the Theravada teaching. So if you want to understand that Mahayana approach, you have to learn the bodhisattva way. And the bodhisattva way is not really taught in the sense that it's not like the Dhamma is a teaching by itself, because the Bodhisattva way actually they get evolved out through all the various perfection and cultivation by all the Samasambuddha, all the great beings. Then all this teaching or understanding evolve, but it is not really compound like a Dhamma, because the variation is really, really too diversified, very, very different, a lot of variation. Then the scope is too extensive because it takes so long. The whole lot of cultivation, it takes very, very long. So that whole Bodhisattva way is really amazing. So in terms of that aspect, maybe you can say there is a big difference between the Mahayana teaching and the Theravada teaching. But what I'm trying to share with you is, if you have really awakened and penetrated the basic Theravada teaching, you can understand all of the Mahayana teaching as taught in the Mahayana Sutta. Except the understanding of the Bodhisattva way is not there. So for those from the Theravada tradition, you want to move on to understand really deep, you need to study the Bodhisattva way and cultivate it extensively. You need to go into it. You need to develop it from actually scratch one, a clean slate. It's really not easy, because not every Zen master or teacher really know the way. You need to really have affinity with the great beings. Then you need to have long period of cultivation. Then you need to have that spiritual understanding from your spiritual nature, Sambhogaya Kaya. And when you come, you need to inherit them. Otherwise, it's not easy. But this style of understanding gets evolved over a long period of cultivation. And it's not just one life. You're lucky, you hit it like a jackpot. Then after that, you're enlightened. The sainthood way is much more easier. But to go the long way, the Bodhisattva way, to realize the full perfection of the 10 paramitas, to realize Sammasambuddhahood, is a very, very long way. That one is very exceptional, very unique and wonderful. Okay, I will read on. Because today the chapter is very long. Okay, seven consciousness is Sankhara. Here I explain. Sankhara is likened to the mental organ. And upon contact with mind, yeah, the mental activity of Sankhara trigger of the eight consciousness, which is the alaya or storehouse consciousness. So this one is basically our thought consciousness. But they call this summation of all the thought as the alaya consciousness or the storehouse consciousness. They believe every thought is stored up in this storehouse consciousness. But as far as my nature's understanding is concerned, you can use this word alaya, no harm, storehouse consciousness, but it's all related to karma. So it's actually the karmic consciousness, karmic nature. So all these are stored in the karmic nature. So they created another term, alaya, as the stored consciousness. So basically, it's a summation of each and every mental intention that you arise during every segment of your life when you come. So the summation of all your thought process, wholesome and unwholesome, all this, they will form your karmic nature. So when you accumulate all this, that's why each and every segment you come, you also create mental intention, mental consciousness. So each and every one of these, they add up to be your karmic consciousness, that it adds to the karmic nature. So you keep on evolving that karmic nature. So the karmic nature can only be like purified after you have the Dhamma understanding, after you have developed all the right view, follow the advice of the Buddha. Then when you start to avoid all evil, you start to create new karmic conditioning. So when you avoid all evil, no more negative karma from that moment onward, then all of your cultivation will be beautiful. But whatever negativity or karma that you have cultivated, or not to say cultivated, you have accumulated from the distant past until now, that one take time to mitigate the sana, or to clear. So because of that, for you to reach a nature like the Bodhisattva, it takes very long. Because let's say through delusion, you have been lost for maybe 10 world cycle eons. Then you start to cultivate, like Sakyamuni Buddha. You cultivate using the wisdom way. The fastest is wisdom way, almost 4 world cycle, Asangaya Kappas. So the 10 world cycle of delusion and karmic negativity is not so easy to clear, do you understand? That's why even Sakyamuni Buddha, the last life, when he was born as a prince and become the Sammasambuddha finally, he also experienced a lot of karmic things. The Jincha incident, the one that fit him with the horse feet and all those things. Then he got hurt by Devadatta. Then there were many other things that he still had to face, the karmic thing. So even a Sammasambuddha until the last birth still can experience some of these things. So if you are not a great being with the understanding, it's not easy. That's the reason why my nature come. From this life, I can see that you have cultivated long enough. Then when you come, like you are very blessed, like everything go your way. And there is only very minor type of karmic thing, very small thing. They do arise when I was young, before I reach Form 3, I think. But the moment I clear my Form 3, Form 4 onward, a lot of things start to happen. Then when I was given the first book that has the Four Noble Truths, then I start to inherit from my karmic nature. Then later on, the condition arise because of my vow and all those things. So everything just flow. Then finally in the year 1989, when my nature connect, I inherited. Then I look back, my nature understand how all this is possible. So for you to have this style of good life and this style of nature, you need to cultivate sincerely for a long period of time, at least a few eons, world cycle. Then after that, most of the karmic nature that you develop over this period of Bodhisattva way cultivation, when you have the understanding, will be beautiful all the way up. You hardly make mistake. The only very likely mistake is before you connect, before you awaken, as a form and mind when you come. But because of your karmic nature, it will also protect you. So you may, when before you connect, you may make some mistake, break some precepts or whatever. But after you connect and develop the understanding, from there onward, all the way up, you are like incapable of fall, incapable of breaking the precept and getting yourself into trouble. Negativity of coming is like no more, impossible. So all this understanding, as you cultivate and evolve, you will know how all these great beings, they are very unique, very beautiful. But like I explained, it's not easy to have complete perfect understanding to plan your life, because Even if nature allow you to plan, you cannot be perfect. I realized that very clearly. That's the reason why I came to know I never really plan, but I make my vows. I invoke power, merits for inspiration, right view, everything. And all this actually planned for me. Yeah. So technically, my nature didn't plan. But because of all this wow and all this understanding, then it evolved by itself. Then every line my nature come with a form in mind. It's like I don't have to do anything. My nature with the understanding only accord and flow. Then everything unfold. It's like everything is already meant to be already, because the condition all planted. There is no planning involved. It's just wisdom that understand, that evolve to vows, aspiration. Then not only you, affinity from other being, everything, the condition will fall into place. But because you always accord and flow, you act following nature's condition, then the wisdom way. That's the reason why when my nature come, everything comes with me. I don't really have problem and need things. But I observe through what I read and what I came to understand. A lot of great masters, Zen masters, especially Mahayana tradition, even some Theravada tradition, actually their life is not so straightforward. A lot of them also go through tough life initially. Then later on, they also have to experience a lot of coming thing and hardship. So not easy. So different bodhisattva has different understanding. They come differently. So it's up to the individual to evolve your own understanding. Okay, we move on to the next section, 2.2. The four foundation of mindfulness in brief. Now this one is very useful for people already at that step to cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness. If you had followed the Avijja Sutta, for you to reach the cultivation of the four foundation of mindfulness, that is stage or step 8. Step 8. So we will do a revision. The 10th step of the Avijja Sutta that leads to enlightenment in the here and the now. First is you must have Dhamma friends, Kayanamitas. So having Dhamma friends is the first step. And when you have Dhamma friends, you can move on to the second step. The second step is you have the opportunity time to listen to the true Dhamma. So opportunity time to listen to the true Dhamma is very useful. So as Kayamita, like we all, we have our Tuesday class, our Thursday class, our Sunday class, or even you go to temple, Brickfield, or what, they have their announcement, their scheduled classes, their activity. So all this, you can develop them. My daughter has managed to open up that chart that shows the 10th step of the Avijja Sutta. So this is the enlightenment sequence. So down here is step 1. I need the marker. You all can see, this is step 1. So having good Kayamitas, Dhamma friends, then opportunity time to listen to the right Dhamma, the true Dhamma. Then when you listen to the true Dhamma, you develop first turning, second turning wisdom. First turning is listening. Then you reflect, contemplate, and inquire to develop the second turning wisdom. So through doing that, you also investigate into the Dhamma. So when the Dhamma stand up to investigation, you have faith. Faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Faith in the Triple Gem. So step three is faith in the Triple Gem. Then when you have faith in the Triple Gem, you will go all out to cultivate the first, second, and third turning wisdom. So the first, second, and third turning wisdom will give rise to wisdom. The first and second turning wisdom will give rise to the initial wisdom, which the Buddha called Yoniso Manasikara. And this is step four, wise attention at the moment of sense experience. So wise attention or wisdom at the moment of sense experience is very important. Because without this Yoniso Manasikara, you cannot cope with life. At the moment of sense experience, the initial wisdom, if it does not arise to prompt you, you will be conditioned into negativity upon contact. Feeling arise. When feeling arise without wisdom, feeling cannot remain as pure feeling. Feeling will be conditioned into craving, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. Then you stir your mind. That's how the mental hindrance come to be. That's how the evil roots come to be. That's how the five mental hindrance come to be. So all this, you can see them in the meditation when you are mindful, when you are aware. But when you have this initial wisdom developed, it will straight away prompt you. Like when you see something, hear something, smell, taste, tactile or thought, process, think of something. Straight away, it will prompt you. He is the way he is. The world is the world. Condition like that, things will like that. So straight away, you will understand. Or it will tell you, Sabbe Sankara Anicchang, Sabbe Sankara Dukkang. You will not think anymore. You will stop. You will be able to accept the reality of the moment at peace. Because when condition is like that, things will like that. It cannot be otherwise. If you want things your way, which is not nature's way, you will suffer. So this initial wisdom, you must develop it first. Otherwise, you cannot act. Otherwise, at the moment of sense experience, you will stir your mind. That's why they tell you, cut a feeling, all this cannot be done. Don't be gullible. Before you have the initial wisdom, Yoniso Manasikara, you cannot do anything. You will be conditioned into craving, karmic negativity, without you knowing, without you having any ability to stop it. You can use your thought process, mundane mind, but it's not going to help you. That's why a lot of people do thought-based meditation, they got trapped, they become gullible, they attach to all these words like, practice to cut at feeling, practice non-desire, practice not to get angry, not to have craving, practice letting go, practice detachment. Where got such practice? You cannot practice. The thing that free you is wisdom. Without wisdom, your mind cannot liberate, cannot free. So this is not a practice. It's just like vipassana. How can you practice vipassana? Vipassana is to insight into the three characteristics of nature. To insight, you have to have the silent mind to awaken. It's not a practice. How can you practice to be wise? You can't. Practice to be skillful, yes. To be good at certain mechanical thing, yes. You keep on repeating it to practice. But if you want to develop wisdom and understanding, you have to cultivate. You have to insight into it. You have to approach it from the right understanding. Otherwise, you can't. So all this understanding is very important. This is step four. It's very important. So without step four, step five cannot arise. Step five is Sati Sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension, the daily mindfulness. So this step 5, which is daily mindfulness, will not arise if you don't have the initial wisdom. That's why step 4 is initial wisdom. After initial wisdom, your mind does not stir like before. Your mind can be at peace. Feeling can remain as pure feeling. It will not be conditioned into craving. It will not stir and react. That's why you have more and more moments of peace, more and more moments of silence. Then when this one builds up, when your daily mindfulness becomes more and more stable, more and more continuous, then you have more and more space between thought. That's how you can become heedful. You can become aware. The moment you are without thought, you are just aware. Finish. Your mind does not stir and react like before. That's how you can experience the true mind, the silent mind, the meditative mind, and you can be in the midst of life, heedful, mindful, all the time. That's why this sati sampajana is heedfulness. You are ever mindful, constantly meditating. Then when you have such stable daily mindfulness, you can see a lot of things, you can understand a lot of things, you can be mindful of a lot of things. Then the natural consequence of that is step 6, sense restraint. Means you cannot break your precept anymore. Your sense restraint is very, very stable. Whatever you see, you will not stir, you will not react. Whatever you hear, smell, taste, tactile, feel or think, you will not stir your mind and react. Then all the evil roots, the four right effort, you would have the ability to do it. Because you understand what constitutes evil, then you are mindful. When they arise, you knew. The right effort to abandon it, the 5 ways, you must have cultivated it. Then the right effort to prevent it from arising after you have developed the initial wisdom, then it cannot arise anymore. Because you already have the wisdom. When you see, you already understand enough. In the past, you have deceived me. Now, you are not going to deceive me anymore. But you know, these are evil roots, root of all evil, lead to karmic negativity, lead to downfall. That's why straight away it will subside. That understanding, that wisdom will give rise to a second right effort to prevent them from arising. And this one needs wisdom. Then, of course, you cultivate the third right effort. Means to cultivate the right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood that is still not in you. And that is part of Noble Eightfold Path cultivation. So when you do that, the third right effort is the beginning of purification. Purification of thought process, citta, everything, content of consciousness and all those things. Then the fourth right effort is to refine upon and perfect all those right thought, right speech, right action and right livelihood that you have developed under the third right effort. So that's how after that you can have sense restraint leading to the step 7. Sense restraint is step 6. Then step 7 is the 3 ways of right conduct or good conduct. Means right thought, right speech, right action. And when you have these 3, you will have right livelihood. Where the way you live your life depends on your thought, your action and your livelihood. Then after that only you cultivate the 4 foundation of mindfulness, which is step 8. That is the one that we are going to discuss under this particular section. But before that, I will finish all the 10 steps first. So after the 4 foundation of mindfulness, by the time you reach step 8, you would have a lot of basic cultivation properly cultivated. Your daily mindfulness very stable, sati sampajana all developed already. Then your sense restraint, your whatever wholesomeness, Then you can invoke power, merit, four causes and condition for you to awaken. So all this will help you. And because of that, when you reach the four foundation of mindfulness, you find it so easy to cultivate. That the four foundation of mindfulness is like very clear to you, very easy to understand. Because you have sati sampajana developed. You have the initial wisdom developed. That's the reason why my nature, when I read the four foundation of mindfulness, it's like I knew what they are. And they are not easy for normal people to understand because it's so profound. So unless you have all this understanding, the four foundation of mindfulness is not easy. So the Avijja Sutta is a very good guide. Before you hit step 4, 5, 6, and 7, you can never go to the four foundation of mindfulness technically. A lot of people straight away jump into the four foundation of mindfulness, but they never read the sutta. There is one part after overcoming covetousness and grief, and then only you start cultivating kaya nupassana, vedana nupassana, citta nupassana, and dhamma nupassana. So what is after overcoming covetousness and grief? Covetousness are all your craving, positive craving, your desire. Grief is your suffering, your misery. So how can you overcome that? You must have the initial wisdom, isn't it? How to overcome that? So which means you must at least a sotapan or a sakadagami before you can really move on to that. That's the reason why under the four foundations of mindfulness, the final conclusion by the Buddha is, if you have cultivated this four foundation of mindfulness, the least you can realize is anagami, the third stage of sainthood. If you don't have the minor conceit or the very subtle ignorance, you will become arahant. Yeah. If there is still some little minor conceit and ignorance, then you will be an anagami, at least an anagami. So understand that so that you are not gullible. So four foundation of mindfulness, like I said, can only be done after you have cleared step 4, 5, 6 and 7 of Avijja Sutta. Yeah. Then you do the step 8. Four foundation of mindfulness, it becomes very easy. Then when you go to step 8, step 9 is a natural consequence. Because when you understand the four foundation, you progress very fast. Then the seven factors of enlightenment, which is step 9, they keep on arising during your cultivation. That's how you realize the enlightenment in the here and the now. Step 10. So step 9, when the factors of enlightenment are there, means it will lead to enlightenment. That's why step 9 will lead to step 10, enlightenment in the here and the now. So this is the enlightenment sequence. Yeah. The other one is the ignorance sequence, how you fall. Yeah. And finally, it leads you back to the first step, which is the lack of kayanamitta without Dhamma friend. So the prerequisite for enlightenment is Dhamma friend. You must have Dhamma friend. And the greatest, what they use, the Buddha used to say, of all the kayamita, the best one is the Tathagata himself. Because he is the fully enlightened one. So Dhamma friends, there are two types. One is the normal Dhamma friends that walk the path of Dhamma. These are ordinary Dhamma friends. Yeah. Means they are still along the way cultivating Dhamma. That's why Dhamma friends are cultivators of the Dhamma. Dhamma friend who walks the path of Dhamma. Yeah. The second type is the one that already realized enlightened, that has the Dhamma. A Dhamma friend that has the Dhamma. These are more difficult to find, and you can have them, you will be blessed, you will be beautiful. So this is How? The prerequisite for enlightenment start with having Dhamma friends. So do not underestimate that prerequisite. Then you look at the opposite, avijja sequence. Avijja sequence, actually you start from the top. He said, the reason why you have the five mental hindrances because you lack vijja, you lack wisdom. So when you lack wisdom, the mental hindrance will be there. So wisdom is right view, born of the five spiritual faculties. When you have the spiritual faculties cultivated, you will understand spiritual teaching, you will awaken. So if you lack the spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance will take over. So that's why avijja sequence is starting with the five mental hindrances. Then when you have the five mental hindrances, which is this one, when you are deluded, the spiritual faculty is not there, the five mental hindrances will arise. When you have the five mental hindrances, the three way of wrong conduct or bad conduct with the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion will arise. So this is the nutriment. Yeah? So in the sutta you read is the nutriment for all this. So now I reverse it down. Yeah? So the reason why you are not able to have the three way of right conduct, you arise the three way of wrong conduct is because you lack sense restraint. Okay? So the lack of sense restraint means you lack mindfulness. You lack clear comprehension. You are not able to be mindful. You are not sensitive. You are not able to silence your mind to see all this. And the reason why you lack mindfulness is because you lack the initial wisdom. Yoniso manasikara. So yoniso manasikara is the initial wisdom. Yoniso means you lack initial wisdom. So this one is the culprit. So this is not having right view, not having right understanding, born of the first and second turning wisdom. And the reason for this is you lack faith in the triple gem. And when you lack faith in the triple gem is you don't have opportunity time to listen to the true Dhamma. Yeah. And the reason why you don't have opportunity time to listen to the true Dhamma is because you lack Dhamma friends. So this one you don't have. That's how the Avijja Sutta, the ignorance sequence come about. So you can also start from the bottom. Because you lack Dhamma friends, that is the nutriment for you not listening to the true Dhamma. And when you don't listen to the true Dhamma, how can you develop faith in the triple gem? How can you develop initial wisdom? So all this natural sequence will manifest. Then when you don't have the initial wisdom means you will lack mindfulness and clear comprehension. Then when you lack mindfulness and clear comprehension, definitely you will not have sense restraint. That's why you lack sense restraint. Then the three types of bad conduct, that's how a heedless person manifests. Then the nutriment for this is because your mental hindrances are very strong. You are very heedless. You arise a lot of heedless thinking. You have wrong view. Your evil roots are very strong. And the result is always due to avijja, ignorance. When there is ignorance, all this manifests. So the ignorance sequence starts from avijja, four. Then the enlightenment sequence starts from having Dhamma friends. So as Kayamita, as I always say, you are very blessed because step 1, 2, 3, and I should say the first 3 steps all Kayamita has. Step 4, most Kayamita should have. Most. I dare to use the word most. But not stable. Then step 5 is the difficult one. If your step 4 is not stable, you cannot develop step 5. Your step 5 depends on step 4. That's why reflect, contemplate, listen to the Dhamma, then have the religious routine a very stable daily religious routine to stabilize your daily mindfulness. Then your first, second, and third turning wisdom. So step four leading to step five is most important. Once you do this two, the rest automatic. Then step six, sense restraint, three, way of right conduct, automatic. Even the four foundation of mindfulness. Okay, so now I hope it's clear. Then we go back to the sutta. The four foundation of mindfulness in brief. First foundation of mindfulness is kaya nupassana. It starts with the first category of cultivation, anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath. This is just to train the mind to be in sati, to develop mindfulness leading to heedfulness. Yeah. Then second category of cultivation is once you are mindful and heedful, you cultivate mindfulness of the four posture. The four posture are standing, aware, walking, aware, sitting, aware, lying down, aware, any of the four posture. Then you move on to the third category of cultivation. Then you move on to cultivate sati sampajana, mindfulness with clear comprehension of all the connecting activities in between the four posture, that is to develop the daily mindfulness of all action and all movement in the present moment, to develop the initial wisdom, to insight into the three universal characteristics of nature. The four types of clear comprehension are clear comprehension of sincerity of purpose. This one you have to reflect, go through it, understand it, so that you will not debate. Otherwise, you will debate. So sincerity of purpose means you are very sincere in your cultivation. You develop the faith, the sincerity, and you persevere diligently. You do not debate through one thing to develop psychic ability, special meditative skill and ability so that you can show off and become Chikohui. No. Your main sincerity of purpose is to develop the training of the cultivation of this Dhamma to realize the enlightenment, which is the wisdom aspect. Only wisdom frees the mind. So your cultivation should lead to wisdom, not psychic and all those things. Then the second one is domain of meditation. Means you can cultivate anywhere, any place, any time. You don't have to wait till you retire. You don't have to wait till you are at a conducive way place, a quiet place. No. Cultivation can be done in the midst of life, in the midst of career, at home, office, or while traveling, doing your daily activity or kiosk. So all this, if you understand, then domain of meditation will help you in your cultivation. You don't have to procrastinate. You don't have to say, wait till I retire. Wait till I'm at a proper retreat center or meditation center. So all this, you can avoid. Then number three is suitability. Yeah? So clear comprehension of suitability, the reality of the here and the now, yeah? Means suitability, means the most suitable place is here and the now, this place, that is the reality, the here and the now. Then the most important people are the people that you are with. Then the most important time to cultivate is now, in the here and the now. That's our reality in the here and the now. And lastly is clear comprehension of non-delusion. It's the 10 defilement of insight. Don't be trapped by it. Then step four. The fourth category of cultivation under kaya nupassana. After you have finished the daily mindfulness sati sampajana, then you should cultivate mindfulness of the four elements which constitute the physical form to see its anatta nature, the four elements, the earth element, part of it. Then apo, water element, tejo, heat element, vayo, wind element. So basically our physical body consists of the four elements, no knowing. That's why you can see the anatta nature, non-self nature, go the way of nature. How can the body be you? They are only elements that goes the way of nature. So this one you reflect and contemplate and understand, then the five daily contemplation you will understand. That's why the Buddha said this body of ours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die, for it has not gone beyond old age, sickness and death. So all the teaching are connected, interrelated. So when you contemplate and reflect on the four elements, you will understand. The physical body goes the way of nature. It's of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. Because this one is not a permanent and changing entity, not you. And also it has no knowing. The consciousness part you have to develop understanding separately through meditation, awareness, sati, mindfulness. Then you move on to the fifth category of cultivation. This one is to contemplate the 32 parts that constitute this physical body, to understand its condition arising nature of all the parts coming together to perform a function of a human being, and to realize its foulness. They call it our body is like a very dirty because within this 32 part there's a lot of dirty thing inside there, like your urine, your feces, your pus, your whatever that stick to your anus, your nose. They call it the aperture within your human physical body. Even your eyes secrete this when you wake up. I don't know what you call that. It's a type of sticky thing, mucus, I don't know what. Then from your nose also have this secretion. Then from your mouth, your tongue, your throat, a lot of this phlegm and sometimes a lot of dirty thing. And when you look within your physical body, inside there you have your blood, you have your organs. Then as they decay, as they become sick, as they become diseased, you see all the tumor and all the what they call infested like those who have cancer and all those things. The cell mutate, your immune system go down, and your organs start to fail you. Then sometimes virus attack, amoeba attack. So a lot of things you start to experience. Then you look at all these 32 parts. When they come together, perform a function, it's like the blockup. Then it arises already, like real exists already. But all these are parts that forms the human physical body. And all these must come together to perform the function of a human being, to arise consciousness with the senses and all those things for you to function. So you see this clearly. Then you realize like the Bullock-Cart analogy. When the parts come together, it performs a function. You give it a name and a concept. Then it arises already like real exists. So in the case of a blockade, you call it a blockade. In the case of the human form, you call it a human being. So it's the same. Like the Buddha said, take the parts away. When the organs fail, separate, the consciousness cannot stay there. Or when they chop you up, you are gone. Or when you go through the nine stages of cemetery decomposition, the whole physical body gone. So when you are young, youthful, you look at the external form, maybe outward appearances, the youth, the youthfulness, the beauty, and whatever when you are young, you know, like the flower. But sooner or later, it age, it decay. Then you realize the aging process is not easy to experience and to go through without wisdom. Living beings suffer, become afflicted. So that 32 part is to develop the wisdom and the understanding so that you are not attached to this skin bag, they call it filthy, foul skin bag. So use it because it's a vehicle and a tool for you to use. So use it. Then finally, the last category of practice is to contemplate the 9 stages of cemetery decomposition of this physical body or form after it's devoid of consciousness. So in the olden days, the Buddha mentioned they will throw your body to the Channa ground. Then you see the various stages of decomposition of this physical body. Then you will start to reflect and contemplate. When it was full of life, you can see some very pretty, very handsome, and very attractive and other things. But when they start to decay, when it's devoid of consciousness, you see they age so fast, they deteriorate so fast. Then finally, you cannot recognize them. So the 4 elements start to disperse and all those things. So this is to do away with desire, craving for the form, to let you see clearly the delusion of form. Form is dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon. So when you attach and cling, it's because the condition then create that condition for it to, like the beautiful flower, when you buy, it's very fresh, it's full of vitality and freshness. Then certain type of flower, they are very beautiful, very attractive. But if you keep it at the altar for a while, it decays. Then you realize it's impermanent. Then you realize beneath the skin, the organ inside, it's not what you think. Things that you believe is very pretty, very attractive, all these are dependent originating, condition arising. When condition is no more, deteriorate, it decay, and it go the way of nature. So when you start to contemplate and reflect on all this, your understanding deepens. Then your craving ceases, because you are not deluded anymore. Form goes the way of nature. Nothing is permanent. Everything is impermanent. Whatever that has its condition for it to arise, use it while you have the condition. Then when condition cease to be, accept the reality and let it be. That's why you can go through old age, sickness, even death, without having to suffer, without having to be afflicted. So all this can be understood. So we finish the first foundation. Okay, now we go on to the second foundation. Vedana nupassana. Mindfulness of feeling that arise upon contact of mind. So be aware of feeling. If feeling has been conditioned into pleasant and unpleasant feeling, then one has to be aware. That is the purpose of mindfulness. Aware that it has become sensual desire and ill will. And what are they? They are the first 2 of the 5 mental hindrances of mind, which is sensual desire and ill will. And it is also part of the first 2 evil roots of greed and hatred. So see this clearly. So with this awareness, we must arise the right effort to abandon the unwholesome thought that has arisen, following the right effort to prevent them from arising in the future. Followed by the right effort, the second right effort, to prevent them from arising in the future. So when you do Vedana nupassana, the sole purpose is to have awareness, to be mindful. That's why you read the Satipatthana Sutta, She said, when feeling arise, you must be aware. Then when feeling has become pleasant feeling or unpleasant feeling or neutral feeling, you must be aware. But after that, the sutta is silent, never teach further. But the actual teaching is, when feeling has become pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, you must be aware. Aware means what? That it has changed. Changed to what? Pleasant feeling. Pleasant feeling is what? Sensual desire. And this is a hindrance. Mental hindrance. You cling on to it, it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. That's why you have to arise the five way to abandon it. The four right effort. The first two. To abandon it or prevent it from arising. So all these are taught in the teaching. But it's not repeated in the Satipatthana Sutta. That's why people don't understand. People thought Vedana Nupassana is pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral feeling. And they go and talk about these three, pleasant feeling, unpleasant, not knowing that they are mental hindrance, part of the evil roots. So this part, if you understand, you can clear very fast. So during meditation, if we are not mindful of the uncomfortable tactile feeling that arises, we are lack of wisdom, then we will react to it and label it as pain, pain, pain. Or unpleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling. Which is the reason why your mind cannot be peaceful anymore. Because pain is a mental hindrance. You understand now? This is ill will. So when you have the mental hindrance, it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. But people is teaching you to know pain, pain, pain. Pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, neutral feeling. What is going on? Ask yourself. Find out. Then I move on to explain. If we have this understanding, then we will be mindful of this feeling via our silent mind to investigate into it, to trace its origination factor, so as to understand how the unarisen mental hindrance comes to be. The mind will come to understand that if there is no wrong view or self-delusion, then the stirring of the mind leading to the arising of the mental hindrance or sensual desire or ill will not happen. Then via straightening of one's view to accepting as they are, one will be able to retrospectively reverse it, thereby understanding how the disappearance of the arisen mental hindrance comes to be via wisdom. Then as this wisdom finally stabilizes, one will come to understand how the non-arising of this mental hindrance in the future comes to be. This is the way to develop wisdom or insight via Vedana Nupassana. And not via just noting pain, pain, pain to do away with the pain. We are resisting suppression and control, etc. So this one is very important. Typo error. Wait, you see, this part is also, part C is also the first category of cultivation of Dhamma Nupassana. Dhamma Nupassana, the first category, mindfulness on Dhamma. The first category of Dhamma is the five mental hindrance. So this one is the explanation. So this explanation actually tie up with Vedana Nupassana. Well, when the mental hindrance arise, you're supposed to go to Dhamma Nupassana and deal with it. Follow exactly what I mentioned here. Otherwise, you cannot trace its origination factor. Then you cannot understand how the unarisen mental hindrance comes to be. Then how in the future it cannot arise anymore. You need mindfulness to see all this, to understand all this. Then D, to go deeper into the investigation, we can also inquire as follow. Before this unpleasant feeling arise, there was none. Hence the awareness of this feeling transforming it into a mental hindrance can bring about the understanding of how the unarisen mental hindrance comes to be. How come I have this reaction of mine to those mental perceptions that I come to perceive via my seeing or hearing or thinking consciousness, thereby conditioning the feeling or sensation into mental hindrance of sensual desire or ill will. It is because of one's conditioning to reject unpleasant feeling, which is a negative craving. So this is all due to habitual tendency, yeah? Hence a wrong view born of habitual tendency. Huh? If you can be at peace with whatever you perceive via acceptance of the reality, what is, then there is no more wrong view. Then with this right view or right understanding, one can just let things be and then silence one's mind to relax into it. When you do not react or grasp or cling onto that sensation with aversion or wrong view, then what happens? The mental hindrance is no more because you didn't label it. Yeah. So this one is very obvious. Eh? Mm. So when the mental hindrance is no more because you didn't label it, then you will develop the wisdom to silence your mind, to be at peace with it. That's how sati take over. Then your mind become quiet again, tranquil, still. Then pain also will be gone. We are no more mental hindrance. So all this is very beautiful. Eh? I read to you again. Eh? Then with this right view or right understanding, one can just let things be and then silence one's mind to relax into it. Ah, this is very important, relax into it. When you do not react or grasp and cling onto the sensation with aversion or wrong view, then what happens? The mental hindrance is no more. You don't create the labeling. You don't react to that sensation through your habitual tendency and wrong view. No more.
No more there.
Oh, no more there. Sorry. No wonder the English word. It's no more there. So the mind that accepts the reality of that sensation without reacting to it can be at peace. True or not? We have no more mental hindrance. Hence, the mind can relax into it and the sensation will be normal, become normal and peaceful again. The lack of peace comes from your reaction of mind to try to push it away with that unpleasant sensation that you have labeled via your wrong view. Yeah. That's how your mental hindrance arises through your wrong view. You react and stir to habitual tendency. Yeah. Meditation is to develop the wisdom to understand and then act with right view following Noble Eightfold Path, which is incapable of negativity, to resolve all issues amicably instead of reacting to them via delusion and wrong view, thereby creating more negativity in the process. So the main purpose and intent of meditation is to realize the wisdom to be at peace with all situations within the moment and not to label it as pain, etc. With no more aversion, then only can we accept the reality of the moment and to understand that it is because we do not know how to relax into it, causing the qi flow to be constricted, thereby causing the unpleasant sensation. This is what you should do. You don't have to resist, suppress, and control it. Okay, we stop here. Huh? 10:20 already. So we are up here, huh? The second foundation. Then Thursday we will continue with the third foundation. Okay, so you can, after this second session, ask question or report your meditation. So we will have a Q&A session. We can have about 10 or 15 minutes. Okay, well, I have a drink. Huh? You can just come in or wave your hand, then we will contact you. Yeah, Adeline, Sadhu.
Yeah.
Come in. Yeah.
Can I report my meditation?
Yeah. Sadhu,
yeah,
okay,
it's
yeah.
Actually relating to today's teaching.
Oh, and, sadhu.
You know, my nature keep rejoicing that I feel
sadhu.
I should report it.
Yeah.
It was during one of the sitting. Okay, my mind settled down very fast.
Sadhu.
Okay, it was in my heart area already.
Yeah.
So then after that, there's some noise, chicky ka ka ka.
Yeah.
And then the
okay.
Yeah, aware that just hearing consciousness. Then yeah. After that, there's somebody talking actually.
Yeah.
So I can just a noise. So I was still in my heart area. So after a while, and I can see that the sanya want to perceive who is talking. And I can perceive that there's one lady which I know. Then after that, that's it. I'm back to my heart area again. So I was able to meditate. Then the noise still going on.
Yeah.
But I was still in my heart area. Then after that, the noise stopped. Then I can feel that silent. There's a shift of like it's very silent, and I was in my meditative mode. Then after that, there's one understanding arising. Okay, phenomena arising and ceasing away. So if you still hold on to the scene just now, which I'm referring to the noise just now, then very funny, I can see that the consciousness moved to my forehead. Okay, if I still continue with it, sankhara will be there, then you'll be suffer. So can see that, perceive that, but when I move my awareness to the forehead, I can just now the lady image is not there anymore. So that's the understanding. Okay, you hold on to that, then suffering will follow you. So then after that, I'm back to my heart area again.
Okay.
So it was full of joy and in a very stillness. And after that, I continue with my meditation.
Then you listen. This will help you. You see, what you have described is something very peculiar and unique to yourself, because from the way you express it, you understand. But you have to go deeper with clearer understanding. So initially, when you start to meditate, most of the time you say you can become quiet and peaceful very fast. So when you can become quiet and peaceful very fast, you stay at the heart area, okay? You stay there. Then most important is until the heartbeat become very clear to you. That one is more important, stabilize that. What you described just now on is good, because after the meditation, you come out, you reflect, you contemplate. That part, you are quite good at it. But you should go deeper, then later on develop it. The other thing that you have to understand is, as you settle down, you become quiet. Then as all this sense experience arise, you must learn how to be just silent and just away, finish. Initially, like you say, the mind try to perceive like who is talking, the image and all things. That one is very normal. But as you develop the stability and understanding, later on you will come to know, because you are meditating. Know also like that, the know also like that, no different one. So why do we want to know? We just silent. Unless you already develop the skill, already very stable, then you want to understand how during the meditative silence and awareness you can also be aware of phenomena, whatever that happened outside. So sometimes like you are asleep, sometimes people can hear you snoring, but the awareness inside is very clear. Then you will know people talking, discussing or whatever, you will know. That you want to understand what they say, you can silence your mind and just let the awareness go there. Then it becomes very clear. Then sometimes even the very subtle movement, crawling of the ant in one corner of the room or what, you can sense them. Your mind can become very sensitive, but you must go into the silent more and more, more and more, more and more, so that the awareness nature stabilize. Then that one, when you are able to come out of it, to develop the understanding, you will learn a lot of new things. Yeah. So what you have gone through is also good, because later on, when the thing over, you go back to the heart, then you go into the stillness, the tranquility. You have to do that until very stable, until the heartbeat become like very clear to you. Yeah. Then a lot of things will happen. Then how it goes through the phases or stages, how it become very different, transform, like Po Ching described, how it become more subtle, more quiet. Then finally, it completely disappear. Then do not be too eager to learn the wisdom. The wisdom will come by itself later on, after you come out of the meditation, after you reflect and contemplate. But when you are in the meditative state, don't try to know. Unless later on, when you already have the understanding, then during the meditation, sometimes it can trigger off understanding. Then you will understand. Then there is joy, like what you described. It's okay. But at the moment, for your stage, you don't try to know so fast. Yeah. Especially when in the meditation, just let it be. Then silent more and more, more and more, more and more. Then whatever that arises, aware. Aware means what? Just let it be. Aware, finish. The main purpose is initially to stabilize that self-awareness nature. Yeah. Then all this you can do later. Later, after you are stabilized already, then you can decide to listen or not to listen. Even if you listen, you will not proliferate like what you have gone through, because for you to perceive and arise sankhara, you still not strong at the heart. You still not able to listen from the heart, hear from the heart, act from the heart, do everything from the heart, because you are still migrating from forehead memory down. You meditate only, you hear. Most of the time you are still at your forehead. That's why when you say you perceive the sound, perceive the lady or something, you went to the forehead, through memory it come out. Yeah. So that one is good. You can see that it's good. But that one you should see in the daily mindfulness better still. So when you are in the meditative state, you stay at the heart there, so that the awareness is just aware. It doesn't go to the brain, so it doesn't catch that thing. The memory doesn't interfere so much. So you learn to listen from the heart more and more, more and more. Everything from the heart out. Then the awareness inside stabilize that daily mindfulness until the sati sampajana become very clear. You already have some form of wisdom, understanding, first turning, second turning. Then the meditative one, the silent mind, the daily mindfulness, and the direct seeing, the awakening, that one you have to go into it. Then you will progress very fast. Stabilize that nature. Don't try to know while you are in the meditative state initially. So whatever you have described just now is good. For you to come to this on your own, then having some form of understanding, because from the way you get interested in the Dhamma and helping out in the short video clip, I know you have learned a lot. Especially when you listen, you reflect, you contemplate, you are very strong in that. But now you have to strengthen your meditation. Your meditation is not as fast as your contemplative understanding and wisdom. So your meditation, you must silent more until that nature become very stable. Then after that, a lot of things that happen in the formal meditation, you can describe it in a much different and clearer way. Like what Po Cheng described one is very good. That one is all in the meditative one. That's like her meditative one very strong. And that one compensates for her contemplation and reflection. That one, once she come out from there, he listened to my Dhamma, she understands. She listened to my Dhamma, she understands. She no need to like contemplate very much. Very fast she understands. So yours is the reverse of what Po Cheng did. Yours, contemplative, and that one, you did a lot, you listened a lot, which is very good. Your listening to the Dhamma step 2 is very good. Then your faith also very good, step 3. So step 4, you have developed quite a bit. But your stability is not there for you to develop the daily mindfulness and clear comprehension. Once that one strengthened, that one can only come about when you go into your formal meditation, strengthen your awareness until your mind enters sati. When your mind enters sati, then everything you do is in sati. Then your sati sampajana will stabilize. And then you can progress very fast. Then a lot of things that you go through will become very different after that. Yeah? Is that it? Can follow?
Yes.
Ah, sadhu to you.
Yeah,
huh?
Sadhu.
Very good.
Sadhu for the teaching and guidance.
Yeah, yeah, sadhu. You have done well, huh? I rejoice. Huh? Sadhu.
Just to check.
Yeah.
When this style of understanding appear in the meditation, I know it's not from the thought. So is it yoniso manasikara? I don't know.
Because that one you too fast want to relate to the Dhamma, understand not? When you too fast want to relate to the Dhamma, like I explained just now, you are very strong in your listening, reflection and contemplation. Then in the meditation, you try to formal meditation, you try to apply the same thing. It doesn't work that way. Because the meditation one, don't try to know it by itself. That's why Po Cheng go in differently. He go into the formal meditation, he stabilize that one. Then once that one is done, it come out, it will understand by itself. A lot of things it will understand. So yours is strong at the first turning, second turning, especially second turning. You combine these two because you spend a lot of time working on that. That's why I can see the way you actually do up all those short video, all those thing, and you're sharing. You have a lot of joy, a lot of, because you listen, the Dhamma is so beautiful. Then you contemplate, you reflect, then the understanding, then you keep on having the joy. But when you meditate, when you start to see something of this moving, the movement, then you use that Dhamma that you develop to your contemplative and hearing to relate, then you develop the joy, which is also not bad, but not the penetrative real one yet. The penetrative real one come from the formal meditation. When you silence everything and that nature understand. So don't try to know initially. Because when you relate all those happening, it's like you try to use your knowledge to understand it, then you develop the joy. The real one is not from that knowledge one, it's from the understanding. From that silent mind, but the silent mind that awakened to it or insight into it one is very penetrative and very different, and that one cut across all phenomena. Yeah, means it's not only restricted to that particular dhamma or phenomena. It will have a universal understanding that it apply to all. Means that understanding is a universal understanding. Means whatever situation, whatever condition, whatever it's like whatever situation, whoever they encounter or whatever condition, no different one. They know how to act already. Then the understanding is universal. It will just manifest. Because the understanding, the understand, is not a knowledge. It's not a knowledge. That one is penetrative awakening. So that one you don't worry. You have to go through the stability of mindfulness until the mind enters sati, then your daily mindfulness very stable, then you will go through the cessation. The cessation initially maybe glimpse, then later on when this formal meditation, the nature stabilize, the mind enters sati, your daily mindfulness become very clear, then you will see all this subtle defilement, which is no longer the gross one that you describe, the very subtle, that whatever, very subtle like and dislike, you become very sensitive, very sensitive. You will go through all those phases later on, but stabilize your deep, your formal meditation. Don't try to know, let it go in until that one very stable, until the mind enters deep. Then daily mindfulness, the daily religious routine, stabilize that. Then a lot of other things will manifest. Okay, so listen to this recording again.
Yes.
It will help you.
That answer to my queries about why the understanding is not penetrative.
Now you will understand.
Sadhu.
You're too keen to relate to the Dhamma that you have developed. Yes, your listening and contemplative one, first, second, turning wisdom is very strong. Yeah, you listen with faith and you do a lot of that one. That's why your approach is different. And your slight mistake is you try to use that wisdom, the initial wisdom, to relate to your formal meditation, which is not something that you should do at the moment.
Because the formal
meditation is different.
Just that day, the meditation, it was just the beginning of the meditation, and then the noise came.
Still not,
it's not deep at all.
Don't try to relate, because that one is still from your first and second turn. You use it to relate, it's not penetrative one. The penetrative one is when your silent mind awakens. By itself, you understand one. So all this movement, the subtle, whatever, sensitivity, or the heart there become very sensitive one. Then it understand many things. Even the hearing, the perception, everything become very different. And then like Po Cheng said, without word one, in the daily mindfulness, he can see, she can understand what is the movement. Because the silent mind that witness all this will awaken. It will understand. It will understand how the form and mind get into trouble, and how living being become entangled. And all that. She will understand. Because that mindfulness is very stable already. Then the nature also open up and she managed to go. That's why her is very stable. And that one compensate for her. She may not do much of the first and second turning. But now, every time she listens, she understands one another. And a lot of joy. Well, that one very penetrative. And she can relate. So either way, you can approach it. So yours is the reverse of poaching. But yours is also very good. Because that first and second turning, the step 2 leading to step 4, step 3 and 4 of Avijja Sutta is very useful also. So you are following that. Whereas Po Cheng went straight into the formal meditation, then after that, she understand. And she like skim through. So no need so much listening and all those things. Because the moment the formal meditation one transform, the listening, no need contemplation or understand the hand then. Because that one is very penetrative. Whereas you're listening, you take time, you listen. Every time more and more understanding going, it deepens. But when the nature penetrates already, the stability of mindfulness, the moment he see truth, she listen the truth, she understand. That's why he said, last time I cannot understand, now keep on understanding. And amazing. Everything is like very amazing. He didn't do anything. The understanding just come. That is the power of formal meditation, the mindfulness, the stability of it, which is very good. Because I like your way, which is the other type, the other way. So So a lot of people can approach it from your way, where your way is easier. Poaching one more difficult because she has the condition. That's why she was amazingly lucky and beautiful because of the condition. So in fact, I would like to rejoice. A lot of Kaya Metta has actually developed the progress and the understanding. So thank you so much. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.